Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Feeling you'll recognize my next guest just from the sound of his voice. After more than 5 decades in the news business, he is a legend in his own right and has been called the granddaddy of true crime, and rightfully so. But I have the distinct honor of calling him a colleague and friend. Keith Morrison is an award-winning correspondent for Dateline NBC, a beloved journalist, and host of multiple number one podcasts. He's made a specialty of true crime mysteries and has gained status as a pop culture icon known and loved for his signature voice, that warm, rhythmic baritone. Keith's work has garnered Emmy and Edward R. Murrow Awards, among others, and has earned him a spot in the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame. He is a husband, a father, and, as evidenced in his reporting, a deeply compassionate human being. Keith, who has spent a lifetime interviewing others, is noticeably more comfortable telling the stories of other people. But here today, Keith and I discuss his prolific career, Dateline, and the recent loss of his stepson, actor Matthew Perry. I'm Hoda Kotb. Welcome to my podcast, Making Space. Keith, first of all, I just want anyone who's listening to know this. I've known you for a long, long time, since I first started working at Dateline.
Yeah.
And I have to say, you were one of the warmest and most kindest spirits, because it can be scary stepping into this whole sort of network thing. Yeah. And it struck me, like, I have to say, when I started working at Dateline and met you, my heart just kind of rested. Because I was like, really nice, cool people work here. So tell me about you becoming a journalist, because you have this, as I think one of the old other producers described, you're like the Mr. Rogers of murder mysteries. You've got that vibe. So how did you decide this was the right field for you?
Oh, I didn't really. Mostly failed out of other fields. But to your first point, when I went to Dateline myself, it was the same kind of feeling, because it is, I mean, what's that famous line? The TV business is a cruel money trench where thieves and pimps run free and good men die like dogs. But Dateline wasn't like that. Dateline has always been a family of people who care about each other. And, you know, when you came along, everybody cared about you. And it was, and I felt the same way myself. So that's Dateline. But I got into this business just because, do you really care? Does it, a long time ago.
Yes, I actually really want to know.
A long time ago, I was busy doing things other than what I was supposed to be doing at college. I was in various like political clubs and things, very important stuff. But I didn't pay any attention to my studies. And so my dean, the dean of the school I was in, said, why don't you go away for a couple of years and grow up, and maybe you should come back after that. I was insulted, of course, but I said, that's fine. I would. I didn't have any choice. And my dad was a preacher. I was let go from the school in about February. My dad was a preacher, and every spring they would send young theology students out to the little small towns around Saskatchewan to fill in for ministers who were taking a month off. So you spend the whole summer doing that. And I wasn't in theology school, but I thought, well, I've been around my dad when he's preaching for my whole life, so I sort of know what to do. So I did that for the summer, and And that's what made me realize I didn't want to be in the religion business. But when that was over, then I was really stuck. I didn't know what to do, and I it was too soon to go back to school. So I was sitting in my grandfather's house one day watching television, and the early evening local news came on. And this guy started reading a story about something or other. And it was a little revelation that came over me. And I said to myself, I can do better than that. And so I started applying around at local TV and radio stations until somebody hired me in a little radio station.
Was there something about, because you talked about your dad being a preacher, and I think that's interesting. And back up a second. When your dean said you're not to come back to school, did your parents like freak out?
They weren't surprised. They were not surprised at all. They knew me pretty well, you know.
Yeah. So did your dad want you to go into business with him? Did he think that this was the right lane for you?
No, I think he just thought, well, kid needs something to do, and he actually might be okay at this, so why not give him a shot?
Well, I read, Keith, that you were actually... there was a funeral that was upcoming. A woman had lost her husband.
Yes,
and that, you were important in that.
Well, I wasn't. It was right after I started this, and it was a old farmer. I thought he was extremely old at the time, a man about 80, died, and it was my job to kind of go over and make the arrangements for the funeral and to help conduct it, but also. His wife, his widow, seemed to look at me as somebody who she could lean on and somebody she could look to for some wisdom about all of this or what to think about it all, because she was devastated. And I think that was really the moment when I thought, this is not work for flakes like me. This needs somebody who's truly grown up. So, it was quite an experience.
That's scary. That's a lot for a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
So when you got started, Keith, in this business, was it one of those instant, like, yeah, I got this, or did it take a while to take?
Well, that first job in a radio station was at a place called CKOM in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Mm. And the news director was a guy who'd been a neighbor of mine, actually, and I had done errands for him for a while. But he was a curmudgeonly old guy. I would drive him to work sometimes, and he would, I'm digressing a little, he would get into the car and he would have a shopping, just a little paper bag, a paper sack with him, like a lunch bag. And in the lunch bag, he was curious to sell what was in there, but there was a bag of glue, little white glue bag, bottle and a bottle of an alcoholic beverage. And by the end of the day, they were generally both gone. But he would use the glue, and this was the interesting part to me. He would get a sheet of 8x11 paper. He would take people's scripts for the radio newscast, and he would cut them up into little bits, and he'd rearrange them on the page and glue them onto the page. That's how he'd always done it as a newspaper editor. And so he decided this should work for radio, which was a good idea. And then you go into the radio, to the booth to read this newscast, and it was all stuck together because of the glue. But that was a curious experience. But after a couple of months, and they gave me a regular gig to read the news on this radio station in the morning, and I slept in 3 days in a row, and so they fired me, and I had to find another job.
What were you doing? What were you doing? Were you out the night before? What was happening?
I just found it hard to wake up in the morning in those days. I was a late bloomer. I couldn't grow up.
Hey, by the way, did you have those pipes back then, or is that something you grew into?
You get old, you know. They happen. Your voice will deepen as you get older, Oda.
Well, I have to say, I love to know your backstory, because I didn't even know all this. I didn't know you're one of five.
Yes, one of five. Yeah. Yes, and they were all quite accomplished, except for their ne'er-do-well brother.
So where did you fall in the pecking order?
Second youngest. Yeah. And they are spread across Canada still.
So as the second youngest, like I'm the middle kid, so I often feel like my sister got all the attention, good or bad. You know, she was always kind of the one who they either came down on or the one who got all the attention. And my little brother was the boy they'd waited for their whole lives. So yay, here comes the prince. And I was kind of the middle one who sort of got lost in the sauce a little bit. How did your childhood experience feel for you?
Well, I always felt like I got away with stuff the others didn't get away with. That somehow they made allowances for me. My parents did not have favorites. It wasn't like that. But I always, from the time I was a little kid, felt that kind of warmth of family around me. Like it was as if I was a favorite child. Probably we all felt that way to some degree. But you know, I was the kid who got away with stuff. There was a middle child in our family, one up from me, and she was the peacemaker, peacekeeper that wanted to do everything right. There was the youngest one who was a bit of she was annoying, but that's what youngest ones are supposed to be. The eldest was really a leader. The second eldest was studious and hardworking. And, So the pattern is quite similar in most families, I find.
I think so. What lessons, Keith, what do you think the biggest lesson your dad taught you was?
Well, I never really felt like I was living up to any of the lessons that he had, but there are different ways to be male, to be strong, to be a real man. And that we see it expressed all the time in our society. There's the aggressive and abrasive kind of male who's probably a little insecure. And there's the softer spoken one who isn't sure he's right all the time. And that's who my dad was, who stressed, you know, compassion and kindness. I mean, I was a very lucky guy. It sounds a little Pollyanna, but that's how I grew up. But there's a time when you're a boy growing up, and you want your dad to be that really strong guy who can, you know, be the tough guy on the playground who can tell other dads off and, you know. And for a time, I thought I was a little embarrassed that he wouldn't do that. But, you know, then you get to the point where you realize it's not the way to live. There's a better way.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, right? You want your dad to be kind of the big man.
Yeah.
Do you know when he was proudest of you, Keith?
I don't really. I can't name a time particularly, no. No.
Mm. Was he proud of you?
I'm pretty sure he was, yeah.
Coming up, I share one of the many lessons that Keith taught me at Dateline. And we get a sneak peek at the upcoming Dateline original podcast, Murder in the Hollywood Hills. Stay with us.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
You have such a way about you, and you played an important part in my life. One of the ways, I still remember this, I was working for Dateline, and I felt like I was sort of behind in everything. I didn't have the interview skills. I didn't have all the things that you needed, the writing. And Neil Shapiro, our boss, called me and he said, I was like, at least I have a voice. That's one decent thing. He goes, Hoda, come in here. I need to talk to you. I'm like, okay. He's like, it's about your voice. I'm like, oh God, what is wrong with that? He was like, listen, all your things sound the same. Whether you're tiptoeing through the roses or whether you're on a freight train, you always sound the same. So he wrote down some words on a piece of paper. And he wrote down the words, and then something amazing happened, and he handed it to me. He goes, read that. And I was like, and then something amazing happened. He goes, punch it. I go, then something amazing happened. He said, I didn't say loud. I said, punch it. And I said, Neil, I don't know what you're talking about, man. I feel lost here. I feel dumb. And he goes, give me the paper back. And he looked at it, and he goes, and then something amazing happened. He goes, see what I did there? He goes, think about that. So I'm kind of walking out bewildered. And I walked to the fifth floor booth. And you were voicing a whole Dateline hour. I stood outside of the booth and listened, because that was when they had the speakers out there.
Sure, yeah.
And when you came out, I'll never forget this, I said, what are you doing in that booth? Because it was masterful. And you said, I'm reading my kid a children's story.
Yeah.
And then I was like, and then something amazing happened. It just hit me. And it changed the way I told stories from that day forward.
I remember that day.
Yeah,
when you,
I mean, when who
you
knows
asked
how?
The question. I thought, Hoda's asking me? That's crazy.
Yeah, please. But what this has turned into, it's so interesting because you are soft spoken with a huge personality that people call you, like, I was reading all these articles, the sexy Dateline guy. Mm. You made everything, like, it's become wild. So what happened? When did you transform, or when did the world transform from whatever it was to this kind of, like, this? It's crazy.
I don't know. I don't know.
Do you hate talking about yourself? Real quick.
Quite a lot.
Is this unbearable to you?
I'm not a very good interviewer, I'm afraid. I'm sorry.
No, but you know why? Because you're the kindest guy in the world, and you hate talking about yourself, which is another great trait of yours. But you do have rock star status, whether you like it or not.
It's a weird thing. I just don't get it at all. But, you know, I don't mind. It's quite nice. People are very nice to me.
They come up
on the street and they want their photographs. You know about that. We're lucky people, you and I.
We are. What do you get asked the most on the street?
What do I get asked the most? That's a very good question. I don't think there's an answer to that question.
I bet you they ask you. I know Savannah stopped you, and I know this because I call her phone because nobody calls her, and her voicemail is you.
Yeah.
She asked you to do her voicemail, and that's where it is.
Mm-hmm. Mostly people ask about, they want to talk about stories, right? Do you remember the story you did about such and such? And I have no clue what they're talking about because, for one thing, as you know, somebody else on the staff, Susan Nall, names the stories just before we go on television.
Yeah.
I've never have a clue what they're called, and often afterwards even. But yeah, so that question is frequent.
Now, did you ever, when you described, you were telling me early on about how you felt like you were not worthy of sitting with this person who had lost a loved one back in the day when you were, you know, kind of going in your father's lane, where you know, in that spiritual world. Yet here you sit across from people all the time, Keith, who are handing you with kid gloves a secret that maybe they've never told anyone before.
Right.
And kind of trusting you with all of that. How do you receive that? And how do you not carry it all around with you?
First of all, it's an amazing privilege to be given that opportunity. I still find it remarkable that you can be in a room with, you know, half a dozen other people, a couple of television cameras, lights everywhere, and the knowledge that what you're saying to this guy sitting over there will be seen by millions of people. And you're being asked questions that are the most intimate questions you can be asked, questions that even members of your family would be hesitant to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
And they answer those questions. And they do trust us with some deep and vulnerable kinds of thoughts. And so you have to be careful with that stuff. I see so much in media where people are not careful with the stories of individuals who have gone through something difficult and bad. They use it for advantage, for, you know, clickbait, where these are truly, truly, truly deep and difficult things to get through. And I don't think we want to make it any worse for anybody. But I come away from those conversations feeling it's a gift. They've given you something.
Well, if you've got a new season of the Dateline podcast,
we sure
tell me about
it. Yeah. These are all kind of, these are great stories, all of them. And you're unshackled when you're doing podcast storytelling. You don't have pictures to worry about. You don't have to hit certain commercial breaks. I mean, we still have some, but not as many. And you can go as long as you want. And you can just let your fingers fly and let your thoughts go. So I love doing them. And this this latest one is called Murder in the Hollywood Hills. And it's a story that I think gets at a real problem. And it also has, I'm trying to think of how much I can say without giving it away. But it has an ending that is, in some ways, pretty satisfying, especially for, well, I don't know. That didn't tell you much at all, did it? It's a good one.
Well,
I like
but
this
if
one.
You say something satisfying, it means it's real good.
Well, I think
real
it might
good.
Be satisfying to you, and I think it might be satisfying to a lot of women, especially, but men too. Oh. It's about people fighting back.
Well, I love it. All right. Well, we always love it. We love a Dateline podcast. We love a Dateline everything. I mean, the longest running show, I think, after Law and Order or before.
Yeah. And we love it whenever you're on it, actually.
Oh, thank you, Keith. Still ahead, Keith opens up about his relationship with his stepson, the late actor Matthew Perry, when we come back.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Well, with that, I'll ask you about somebody near and dear to your heart. A lot of people don't even realize that you are Matthew Perry's stepfather.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about you during that time, Keith. I saw one fleeting image of you there when everything was going on. And I wondered how you were doing. First of all, how are you and how is your wife after Matthew's passing?
Well, it's a... It as other people have told me hundreds of times, it doesn't go away. It's with you every day. It's with you all the time. There's some new aspect of it that assaults your brain, and it's not easy. It's especially for his mom, and they were. I don't think I'm giving away too much if I say that toward the end of his life, they were closer than I've seen them, had seen them for decades, and texting each other constantly, and him sharing things with her that most middle-aged men don't share with their mothers. And then, so he was happy, and he said so, and he hadn't said that for a long time. And so that gives, it's a source of comfort, but also, you know, he didn't get to have his third act, and that's, it's not fair. And it, as he said himself, if I suddenly died, people would be shocked, but not too many people would be surprised. And he was right, I think.
Did it surprise you?
It was the news you never want to get, but you think someday you might. So, yes and no, I guess, is the answer to that.
Yeah. Do you still feel his presence? Do you still sense him?
He was a larger-than-life person. You know, we do this, it's that this become this funny trope of Dateline, lit up a room, right? Or the center of the room. Well, he was, and he was always the center of attention everywhere he went. That kind of personality. He was goofy, he was funny, he was acerbic. But even if he didn't say a word, he was the center of attention. So, yes, I mean, it's gone, but you still feel the echo of it everywhere around here.
Yeah. You know, it seemed by so many accounts he was on the mend. I mean, that's what it was. That's what it seemed like. And I think,
as he put it himself in his book and in the talks that he had about his book, it is a disease, and it's a very, very difficult one to beat. I don't think he ever would have said, I mean, he felt like he was beating it, but you never beat it. And he knew that too.
Keith, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I'm really sorry.
Okay.
I know that you and your wife have started a foundation.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yes, with the help of some very, you know, capable people. Yeah, the Matthew Perry Foundation, and it's the goal is to do whatever can be done to help organizations that are trying to, you know, identify the disease and how to deal with the disease, and agencies and organizations that are specifically, you know, helping rescue people in difficult situations and trying to scoop them out of a vulnerable place and get them some help, a chance to beat it, to, you know, to beat it back. You're always beating it back. Right?
Yeah.
The disease is built in. I really don't think it ever goes away. It's in your brain, and the brain doesn't want to let it go.
Mm-hmm. And is this foundation helping Suzanne sometimes when you have a place to go?
I think it's going to. It takes a while to get these things rolling, as you know. So, yes, I think it definitely. Yeah. And, you know, Matthew grew up in Canada, in Ottawa, and it's important to us. And I think that will be her, one of her big concerns is making sure that there's a good Canadian presence for this, because he is, you know, loved in Canada, as you can imagine. And so that'll be important.
And just lastly on this subject, Keith, how would you describe him as a stepson, your relationship with him?
Well, in a way, our personalities were, as they say, chalk and cheese. He was loud and out there and funny and aggressive. You know, I'd take him to hockey games on Saturday mornings, and he would always score all the goals. And if he didn't score all the goals, he was so angry all the way home, and he wouldn't talk to anybody. He was really mad. You'd take him to a tennis match, and he'd usually win. He was a very good tennis player. But if he missed a shot a couple of times, his racket would be on the ground and he'd be stomping on it and trying to break it into pieces. He was so mad. And so he had that kind of very fiery personality. And mine is not like that, as you can imagine. But we got along fine, you know. I never tried to replace his dad, because dads are dads. But I was there for him, and he knew it, and we were close.
So you were able to support him throughout, Keith, throughout all those years?
As much as possible, yeah, as much as possible. It's a mm-hmm. yeah. That's a whirlwind of a life to get involved in a program that became as wildly successful as it was, to be to be fighting an addiction that was so virulent, that went after him so hard, and he gave into it frequently. He came to understand. He'd get to a certain point, and then he knew he had to go and get treatment. And he'd accept help when he needed it. But it, as he said himself, it kept happening. And it was a big bear. It was a tough thing to beat. Big, terrible thing.
Well, Keith, just lastly, when you make space for yourself, when you get a day that's all for you, no commitments, no interviews, no nothing, How do you fill that day?
I'm very happy. I need to fuss around. I need to do a little bit of something here and there. So if I have absolutely nothing, I do start looking around and maybe bothering people too much. But no, I'm just generally a happy person. I don't have a lot of drive, actually, Hilda.
I don't agree. Keith, you are an awesome human
You're
being.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for sitting with me today. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Thank you, sweetie. All right, I'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Making Space with Hoda Kotb is produced by Allison Berger and Alexa Casavecchia. Our associate audio engineer is Juliana Mastrilli. Our audio engineers are Bob Mallory and Catherine Anderson. Original music by John Estes. Bryson Barnes is our head of audio production. Missy Dunlop-Parsons is our executive producer. Libby Least is the executive vice president of Today and Lifestyle.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.